Hello, Minnesota boxing fans, and welcome to another episode of the Minnesota Fight Night podcast. I'm Brian Johnson, and my co-host is Sean Strauss. In this episode, super middleweight contender Senna Ogbeko, 28-2 with 22 knockouts, previews his December 16th fight against WBA super middleweight champion and Minneapolis fan favorite David Morrell Jr. at the Armory in Minneapolis. A native of Ghana, now fighting out of Nashville, Ogbeko is riding a 5-fight winning streak, including an upset victory over previously unbeaten contender Isaiah Steen. He hopes to beat the odds again versus Morrell, one of the most avoided fighters in the 168-pound division. The two were scheduled to meet up in April, but the boxing commission scrapped the fight after an irregularity showed up on Ogbeko's MRI. Now, the African nightmare is medically cleared to go. In this interview, Ogbeko gives his take on the MRI issue, talks about his rise to contender status, and much more. I hope you enjoy the interview. Well, thank you for being on the podcast, Senna. I wanted to obviously talk about the Morrell fight and your career, but I wonder if we could start out by if you could introduce yourself to the Minnesota boxing fans who might not be familiar with you and your career. I understand that you're a native of Ghana and now living in Nashville. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, so I'm 30 pro fighting. I'm 28-2. I moved to the U.S. 10 years ago in 2013. I've pretty much lived in a lot of different states for short periods of time, but my primary home has been Nashville, Tennessee. So that's where I've lived and boxed out of. That's where I've trained a lot, and that's where I've made my most progress as a fighter. So I came here just shortly after college, literally a month after college. I was 15-0 when I moved here, lost my pro debut. I felt like it was, a step up too soon. But that experience made me better in the sense that I moved to Las Vegas afterwards, trained at the Mayweather Boxing Gym for a year. So I garnered a lot of experience there. Then I moved to Nashville, which is still my home now. And while there, I trained with some Olympic level coaches, and then I had a chance to travel all over, going to Miami, Houston, sparring the likes of Peter Cullen, going back to Vegas, sparring the likes of Buddy Jack. I've had invitations to go to Canada to spar, the likes of Vitebia and whatnot. So it's just a lot of, and of course, even with Ronnie Shields, who is like my opponent's coach at the moment, I've actually been to Houston for three whole camps where he was actually going to be my coach. Just so happened that we ran into problems every single time. It was one logistic issue or another. So it just never materialized. And I ended up, staying in Nashville and not going to Houston to, to be with him as my coach. So that was even a possibility at some point, but it just never happened. So on the boxing scene, I feel like on the local level, all these fighters know me. Like, you think of the big names, they know me, the champions know me. I come to Las Vegas, I go to the Mayweather Boxing Gym. All these guys know me. I go to gyms in Miami, New York. It's just, I'm not on the mainstream level. So they know the quality that I bring to the table, but then, it becomes an issue of risk versus reward. And that is what primarily has kept me in the shadows, because some of these guys know that, I'm good. But then they're like, well, he's not very well known. And if I should lose to him, they'll go like, oh, I lost to a nobody. So it's been my biggest issue, my biggest hindrance. And luckily last year, I signed to a new manager who was actually willing to put a little money into me. And that's what a lot of fight fans don't understand, that, to build your fighter, before a fighter becomes a household name, they need, some kind of investment. And that is like paying people who ordinarily wouldn't fight you to fight you. So last year we had two really good fights. The first against John Thompson, who was a world title, former world title challenger. We got that win, and then the next one was a good prospect who had a really good record, and that was Winfred Harris Jr. He was 22-1 at the time, and they were so confident they were going to beat me that his promoter actually declined a purse from us and was like, "I'm going to pay my fighter. Do you guys worry about yourselves?" And he actually paid the sanction fee for the belt that we fought for, which is the WBC, which was the WBC USA super middleweight belt. So, I mean, they were super confident they were going to beat me, but I also knew my quality, my skill level, and I pulled off the TKO win in the ninth to win that belt. So, shortly after that, of course, his gym mate at the time, Isaiah Steen, he actually called me right after that fight. Literally that night, he was like, he wanted to fight me. And I was like, "Hey, you're 16 and 0, you're undefeated. I have a really good record right now. I think I was 26 and 2 at the time. I just become 26 and 2. So I was like, "Hey, I don't think this is a fight that we need to be fighting in Iowa Sioux City. Like, we need to, get this on a big card." But then, of course, as a fighter, that's beyond your means. So I just kind of, let it go. And just so happens that he was supposed to headline a Showbox on Showtime card, and his opponent, got COVID. So I was contacted as a last minute replacement on a 2 week notice. And when you get a 2 week notice, it's technically a 1 week notice because that last week you're not training. You're just, going through, fight week, events. So I went in there and I was able to pull off the upset, and it was I felt like I did enough to win because one of the judges gave me 8 out of the 10 rounds. The other one gave me 7, and then the other one, the last one, gave me 6 out of the 10. It was shocking because sometimes, these networks are notorious for giving the decision to their A-side fighters once it goes the distance. So I was glad that they did the right thing. And of course, that I believe is what set me up for this Moral fight, which was supposed to happen in April, which was is a whole nother conversation. We'll get to
Yeah,
that. But
we'll get into that. But that was a huge win over Isaiah Steen, and on Showbox, as you said, I don't think a lot of people expected you to win that fight, as you said. What do you think was your key to victory there?
I mean, absolutely, you're absolutely right. Nobody gave me a chance. I was a plus 400, underdog. And I going into that fight, I really didn't know what to expect from Steen because he's a very long rangy fighter, and he has the ability to do both, like trade with you or box if he wants to do that. I feel like he's somewhat of a complete fighter. Except that I don't think he could take a punch. So what really changed the course of the fight was that first round. I believe I landed a shot that got his attention. And if you watch that fight, towards the end of the round, he grabbed my legs and then he kind of wrestled me to the ropes. And that was because he was rocked. So when I hit him with that right over the top, it's very hard to see in that moment. But being in the ring, you kind of know what's going on. So it kind of wobbled him, and then he immediately grabbed me. And as I tried to pull away, he held on pretty tightly. So we both ended up, in the ropes. And I think that first round pretty much set the tone for the fight. And from that point on, he became very wary of the power, and he chose to box, And, the thing is, people look at me as a power puncher that I hit hard just because of my KO ratio, but they leave out the subtleties, the subtle things that I do, whether defensively or offensively, to set up my shots or to get away from my opponent's shots. So that evening, I actually, negated his. He has a really good jab. I was able to negate it while implementing my own offense. And that fear that he developed in that first round pretty much kept him from really trying to engage because he was scared of getting knocked out. So I felt like that was the biggest determinant factor, aside the fact that I also definitely picked up the pace in the last three rounds, which I won on every. So I literally won the first three and last three rounds on every judge's scorecard that night.
And just to circle back a little bit, it looks like just looking on BoxRec, your first, I think, 13 or 14 fights were in Ghana.
My first 15 fights were all in Ghana, yes.
Okay. So did you feel like you needed to come to the US to sort of bring your career to that next level, or what was the
Yes, absolutely. Like when you look at the history of champions, and Ghana has, I believe, 9 world champions at the moment, from Azuma Nelson, DK Poison, all these other guys, Joshua
Azuma
Kote.
Nelson?
Yes, all of them had to come to the US to, like, in order to win a championship. I believe the only person who may have won it outside of the US was Aikwote. He won it in France, but regardless, it was still overseas. So it wasn't something that I was very keen on because I had a budding, journalism, public relations career going on, and I was hoping that I could keep it in Ghana and then, balance both. But there was a time that I had to make the decision, whether I wanted to pursue the boxing career or I wanted to just stay and keep it at the local level. And I was like, no, this is what I want to accomplish. So I let go of that dream, that other dream, and then I just went full on boxing mode. So yeah, when I came here, I was 15 and 0, 15 knockouts. But I was also very well aware of the level of competition. What I wasn't really fully aware of was just, that performance anxiety on that big stage. And that truly was what got me on that night, because even my opponent, I talked to him years after the fact, who I lost to, Raymond Gatica. And he incidentally, like, he just so happens to have been a left-hander too. He was my first left-hander that I fought. And he was like, yeah, I hit him harder than he'd ever been hit. But he did, he definitely felt like it was more the stage, the grandness of the stage. And since then, it's been one of my biggest objectives to, like, work on that mentally. And I've, done a lot of therapy and just, gone through the motion, just basically try to cover all the bases and making sure that, okay, I have everything checked so that come, a big fight night, I will be able to deliver as I deliver in the gym. And for me, that's always been the most important thing. And over my last 4 fights, I've been able to show that and show that improvement. My performances in training have translated to the fight night. And I feel like it's something that coaches really don't emphasize enough, because there are a lot of great gym fighters, but that performance doesn't translate onto fight night. And it's a psychological thing, it's a mental thing, and it's a real thing for a lot of fighters. And I feel like, more coaches need to, like, and as much as they focus on the physical aspect, they need to really do a lot of mental preparation to not just the whole macho, being hard mindset. No, there has to be a much more, like, scientific approach to that.
Right. Absolutely. And I had the privilege of being at your most recent fight in Sioux City at the convention center there. Very impressive win. I believe it was a second round knockout. You finished
Yes,
it
sir.
off your opponent with a right hand, I believe. And
Yes, sir.
so it, and I see that you've had a couple of fights there in Sioux City. Do you have, other than that, do you have any connections with Iowa or the upper Midwest?
No, so really, originally, when I signed with my new manager, which Lamont Chappelle, LCA Management, we were looking for a card. We had an objective. So the plan that I the reason that I sought him out to begin with was I realized that, okay, I've been floating around for so long and I'm literally waiting on some, champion to offer me a fight, and that's not gonna happen. So I was like, okay, what's the best way to go? We have to get ranked in one of the sanctioning bodies to even be considered. So I was like, okay, my objective is we're gonna fight so many fights and eventually pay for a belt, whether it's a, it's a regional belt, some minor belt that will get me ranked. So we were looking for cards all around, the US to be on. We actually looked at some places in Atlanta, some cards in Atlanta and Nashville, and then we somehow ended up with the Giovanni's family, who were putting on shows in Sioux City, Iowa. So it was my first time there. I was like, man, this is the middle of nowhere. When I got there, we had to drive almost 2 hours from the airport. The first time I went there, we actually flew into Nebraska and then drove an hour 30 to the site. The second time I fought there, we flew into South Dakota and then drove another hour 30 minutes to get to Sioux City. So it was definitely new terrain for me. I had never been there, and established a relationship over there during the course of the last year. And that's where I've had my biggest wins. Well, not my biggest I've had, it set me up for that showdown in Atlantic City, New Jersey, which is my biggest win because, I mean, he was undefeated and it was the biggest stage, that I had won on. So, yeah, that's pretty much my only connection. It was just meant to be a card that I was going to be on, and that was it. No more. Yeah.
I could tell that the Iowa fans greeted you warmly, and I'm sure you'll get a, I believe you'll get a warm reception in Minnesota, even though you're coming in against the Morrell, whose adopted
Yes.
hometown is Minneapolis, as you know. But Minnesota Fight fans are pretty sophisticated
Yes.
boxing fans, and I think they will know and understand that you present a tough challenge for Morrell. But let's talk about that. And you've been calling him out for a while now. There was a fight that was supposed to happen in April, and obviously it didn't. Walk us through that and tell us, I guess, why you've been calling out Morrell, and why this fight makes sense for you at this time.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, these type of fights are the fights that I sought out to get last year when I signed up with a new manager, because I'm like, okay, I'm 20 something plus. I was 20 something plus fights at the time. I'm like, if I'm not making a mark at this point, then when am I ever going to make a mark? And so I need to get going. And as you know, age, time is not on anyone's side. So I need to make that mark. I've been in gyms where I spar and then people come on like, yo, like why are you not signed to any other major like promotional teams, promotional company? You should be signed. But unfortunately, boxing is not fair. It doesn't work that way. So I had to like chart my own path. So with the whole moral thing, I was supposed to fight him because of the win that I had on Showbox, and they typically like filter super middleweights through there as his opponents. And it was kind of, the whole thing was shady from the get-go because apparently they signed somebody as a backup even before they had me, which was Yamaguchi Falcao. And they had flown him from Brazil, and he was actually in Florida training. But there's something about not knowing that you're the definite opponent and training hard versus also not knowing if you're just a standby, you're never gonna fight. You don't train quite as seriously. And of course, when I got the contract, I mean, I was excited. At the time, I wasn't aware of, Yamaguchi's standby status, but he himself revealed it in an interview prior to the fight that he had been on standby the whole time. So I'm like, okay, I understand it's not standard practice to have somebody just in case the main opponent falls out, but it's just so weird. Like, I at that time I had moved my camp to Las Vegas, and I actually had been doing a lot of running in the mountains and training in the mountains because I wanted that altitude, training benefit. And I feel like they saw that. I also had, reliable information that at the time when he had gone into camp, he was a little overweight. So it was like he was struggling to make the weight. And when you're struggling to make weight and balancing that with, getting ready for the fight, there are a lot more difficulties in place. Now, I'm not saying that they had a hand in the MRI whole situation, but the fact of the matter is that it was the only thing that somebody could have affected. And it's a very subjective report. So all the doctor said was, hey, I saw a black spot on there, and it's indicative of a brain aneurysm, a 1 millimeter brain aneurysm. And when I saw it, I was shocked. And to be truthful, I was generally concerned for my health because I was like, well, if I have this is a serious problem, and I need to like find a way to address it. So immediately I even started looking at like, I already eat pretty healthy, but I was looking at like food options to help me better deal with it. But I was like, man, this whole thing is very shady. So the commission initially had said that, hey, we want a second opinion before we can make a decision on this. So I went to see a neurosurgeon. This neurosurgeon has about 30 years of experience. He's looking at brain scans every day. And he looks at it, and his first, he, I walk into the office, and this guy, he had already looked at the scan by then. And, his immediate reaction is, you guys are wasting my time because I have more serious issues to deal with. Like, I don't see anything on the brain scan that indicates that there's a 1 millimeter aneurysm. There's no dark spot, whatever the radiologist claims he saw. And even if there was a 1 millimeter aneurysm as described by the radiologist, It doesn't matter because it's not known to rupture from trauma, which is essentially blows, you know. So he wrote his report and I submitted it to the commission the very same day. And then this is where it felt even shadier because or more shady because they weren't willing to listen, even though they had asked for that second opinion. And then they made it seem like, oh, 9 days to the fire was there was too little time to convene a committee to the board to vote on it. And I was like, well, this is a very big fight. This is a very important fight. And you guys should be able to do that for me to go ahead. It's my livelihood too. Because at the end of the day, I'm a prize fighter. You guys don't know how much more of my money I've put into this. So they basically robbed me of that opportunity and then labeled me as damaged goods. And I was forced to leave Vegas to go back to Nashville at the time. And I went to see my neurologist who I presented the scan to, and she kind of went through everything and she was like, you know, I don't really see what they described it as a secular aneurysm. And the secular aneurysm has a very specific shape. And she was like, I don't even see that. Like if he had just said it was an aneurysm or the other type of aneurysm, I would have maybe been inclined to think that he was right. So due to that, she ordered a separate, you know, test that was even more comprehensive than what I did in Vegas, which I went to do. So of course, there was nothing. So I presented that result to the commission, and within days, I was granted my license, and I was fully licensed in Nevada. But this was a week and a half too late. The fight had already happened. So that even convinced me even further that, okay, there was some other hands to play. I cannot prove that. I cannot prove that, but I couldn't let it go because I felt like I was robbed of an opportunity. Not only, of course, I mean, nobody can say that the money is never a big part of it. Money is always, that's why, that's the motivation for most things in life. But if money was my biggest motivation, I would have stayed in Ghana and I would have done what I was doing because I had very, very promising prospects. I didn't have to, I'm one of those guys who didn't have the box. I chose the box because I was passionate about it and I loved it. I had a career that I could have pursued that could have made me significantly more money as of now in my life. It would have made me significantly more money. But I chose to pursue boxing as a passion. So my goal is to win a world championship. I want to win that for my people. I want it to be something that they feel proud of, like they did of Azuma Nelson, I quote and all that. So the call out was essentially, hey, you know, you guys were supposed to fight me. And you claim that I was sick for whatever reason, but now I've cleared my name. So what prevents you from fighting me now? If you don't fight me, then clearly it means that you know you guys were scared and were avoiding me for a reason. And truly, they were looking elsewhere. They were looking to fight, you know, the likes of Benavidez, the likes of Canelo, whatever they could get. It almost seemed like he was trying to cash out, but I'm like, hey, you're only 9-0. You have time to grow and develop. Why are you in such a rush? You know, why do you want to just take this huge jump when you haven't finished business? So he was calling out Benavidez all the time and hounding him. And every time that he hounded him, I took the opportunity to hound him back. Yeah, you know, to also follow suit. And I think that it was a combination of him, nobody wanted to fight him because of the media buzz that had been created around him because of, you know, he fought incredible opponents and beaten them. And his last win was very dominant, although also have reliable information that that guy, Yamaguchi, was already pretty sharp. No disrespect to him. But what he did was supposed to happen. I think Yamaguchi would have lost to any decent super middleweight that night. But the fact that he did it in the first round, you know, was a statement. And I think that's where the hype has been built. And the result of that is that a lot of fighters don't want to fight him, especially not for the money that they were offered. Because a lot of these other big names have big money behind them, have machinery behind them. And if they're going to fight a fighter, they want returns that will be more than the investment they've made in the fighters. So I'm the one guy, I haven't had a whole lot of money pumped into me, but I still have had money pumped, you know, on some level. So but for me, more than anything else, it's about the belief in myself that I can win this fight and propel myself to even greater heights. And that's why I'm looking for that. This is the guy that nobody wants to fight. And I want to fight him. And that was what I sought out. And I'm happy that, you know, they eventually came around because the truth of the matter is with the way boxing is, they literally could have just pushed me to the side and I could have been lost in the shadows. And the PR machinery, the way it works in boxing, they can just, make a story around everything and make it work and make it make sense to boxing fans. But I'm truly glad that, and thankful to him and his team that they came back around and decided to at least give me this opportunity to challenge him for his belt. So
Yeah,
thank you overall. Yeah.
and I think that's the good news now that the fight is happening. And just to summarize what went down before, it looks like there was an issue with the MRI and the commission then called off the fight, but you've since been cleared and you're good to
Yes.
go. And
Yes.
so the fight's happening, thank goodness, on the 16th of December at the Armory. When we talked recently, you said that your prediction is you plan to knock him out.
Yes.
Do you think that's the only way you can win, given that you'll be
No,
fighting in
no.
Morrell's hometown? That I mean, do you think you can get a fair decision there?
I feel like I can, but in as much as when I say a fair decision is all like subjective, like I feel like I could get a decision, say a split decision, which ordinarily should have been a unanimous decision, you understand? Which still wouldn't be a fair decision, but it would be in my favor. So I definitely can get a decision in my favor. I absolutely believe that. I think that they're absolutely underestimating my skill level, and they think that, I'm just all power. What's funny is, I've trained with Ron Shields, like I said, three camps, and this guy he's seen me. Like, I have a lot of respect for him. The first fight after the whole thing started to fall through, I called him and we actually had a little conversation about the whole incident, and he felt sorry that it wasn't going to happen, but I mean, of course, he has the best interest of his ward at heart. So, we kind of left it at that. He doesn't have much of a control over it, but he has seen me operate. He has seen me spar a number of times, and I feel like maybe his memory, because he goes through so many fighters, his memory doesn't serve him well. But if you remember it properly, he would know that, yeah, I'm more than just power. But I'm not banking on them, respecting me 100%. No, I don't care. I don't care if they underestimate me, overestimate me. I am training in such a way that when I go in there on December 16th, however it went, however I get the win is how I'm going to get the win. So if I don't knock him out, hopefully I put on a master clinic, and I truly think that if the fight is close or competitive, he will get it if that is if it goes to the decision. But it's boxing. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Yeah.
Sure. And I asked that question not to suggest that you're not a good boxer, but just because of the hometown,
No.
the home
Yeah, I
cooking
understand.
angle. So, but certainly, I think Minnesota fans are looking for this fight. I think a lot of people will be watching, especially since this will be Showtime's last boxing event. You boxed on a Showbox card. Any thoughts on that? Just the fact that, I mean, this is a pretty big deal, on a number of levels.
Yes. It's a pretty big deal, and I really, really feel honored that I was considered, for this event. It's their last show. It's still, for every time they talk about Showtime boxing, it's gonna come up, and the results of this night are gonna come up, and they have, like, through their programs, the developmental showcases on Showbox and whatnot have, grown boxing a lot. So I feel like being the last show is super, super significant, and I need to make a very positive mark on the show. And that's my most important thing. I need to make a very positive impact, win it, and use that as a catalyst for even bigger fights next year. That is my objective. So I don't want to be the guy that every time they show the boxing telecast is there. It's like, oh, he's getting beaten up, he's getting pummeled up, and that is the memory that I leave. It's an honor. I never imagined that when I started boxing years ago that this would be, I would be headlining the last Showtime boxing telecast. It's an unfortunate event for boxing, but I believe there are recourses, like there are multiple avenues that we can keep everything going. But it definitely, An honor and privilege to be on this card. And my ultimate goal is to make sure that I win this belt, leave the best impression that I leave, and become, it becomes a memorable part of history for me. Yeah.
And the Armory is a great venue. I'm sure you've probably watched fight. I don't know if you've been to the Armory, but
I
it's a
haven't
great
been, but I've
venue.
watched fights on there, yeah.
And I'm biased because I help out on the Armory publicity team. So full disclosure there, but it's a great place to watch a fight. And from what I understand, the fighters have told me that they enjoy boxing there as well. But I wanted to, we don't have a lot of time left here, but I wanted to, I guess, get your thoughts quickly on the super middleweight division as a whole. You've got obviously Canelo is there at the top. Everybody's gunning for him. Benavidez, David Benavidez, he's going to be fighting Boo Boo Andre. That'll be a great fight, I think. Caleb Plant is still in there in the conversation. Charlo, what are your thoughts on that division as a whole and where you
I mean, the
fit?
division is very competitive right now. There are a lot of great fighters there, and it's a hot division. The only unfortunate thing is that Canelo is hoarding all the belts now, and we all have to go through Canelo. I feel like, they just recently stripped Crawford, and it's not
Right.
enough for one man to hold. It's Boxing is so political. That's why some people are able to hold their belts for longer. Some people get stripped right away. Like Jermall Charlo hasn't fought in over 2 years, and he's still the WBC super middleweight, the WBC middleweight champion. So it's all very political. I feel like being a fighter and being honest, being truly honest with myself, I think that at the moment, among the crop of super middleweights, Benavidez is most deserving of it. Shot against Canelo, and I think that it's time that if he's not ready to defend, he needs to let some of the belts go. And I really truly believe that the only reason why Canelo embarked on this mission to unify the belts at super middleweight was because Benavidez lost it on the scale to begin with. And if he hadn't lost it on the scales, I don't think that he would have embarked on this mission to become undefeated. So that kind of aided his course. Caleb is a guy that I have a lot of history with, Caleb Plant. And when I moved to Nashville back in 2014, till end of 2014, started 2015 there, me and him sparred, and people incorrectly say I was his sparring partner. No, I wasn't his sparring partner. We're gym mates. We're under the same coach. We sparred every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, religiously for over 2 years. And every time that he had his camps, I was there to help him. But he wasn't there to help me the other way. And they basically saw me as a threat when it was all said and done. And basically threw me under the bus because I had opportunities to sign with certain managers and whatnot, even here in Las Vegas with a member of the team. And then they led me along, they strung me along, making me believe that they were going to have me sign with PBC or Dusty Cuba Jr. And then when it was time, they let me high to dry, So it's like there's a lot of like I should be bitter about certain things, but I'm not. You understand? I made the decision years ago that okay, they picked their path. And they try to wreck me, and I'm going to pursue my own path and try to find my own way. It's crazy how many super middleweights, Caleb Plant, I've had issues with them. Of course, Morrell, most recently with the MRI, and even Demetrius Boo Boo Andre. I was offered a fight against him when it was with Matchroom Boxing back in 2021. And then he said he wanted more money. So I was like, okay, negotiate as little off my purse and give it to him and then let him come back. And then he was like, he eventually said he didn't want to fight me. They picked an opponent for him. I boarded a flight to Los Angeles just to train. And while I was there training, a week to the fight, I got offered the fight again. Mind you, significantly lower purse than I was first offered. And I was like, cool, I'll take it. So I immediately changed all my plans to be in LA. And I changed my flight to leave the very next day to go to Nashville so I could get ready to go fight him in Miami at the time. And as soon as I changed my flight plans, they called me again and they're like, well, the fight isn't happening. So we scratched it off. And so that he rubbed me off twice. He rubbed me wrong twice. And so, like all these super middleweights guys at the top, I've had some kind of run-in. We've had some kind of run-in. And it's not pleasant. But I'm happy that I'm finally getting an opportunity, come December 16th, I'm just preparing to the best of my ability I believe that my true skill will come through and just my strengths, everything will come through and I'll prevail that night. Yeah. But Canelo needs to let go of those belts.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. You don't know if he's going to move back up to light heavyweight and try to get the rematch with Bivol, or That's a whole other topic, but it would be certainly good to see him fight a Benavidez or someone like yourself, or just to get
But of
stay
course,
busy.
I understand that I have to earn it, and
Yeah.
I believe that once I beat Morrell, we do have a rematch clause though. But I believe that once I beat him, December 16th, I would have earned the shot, and I feel like Canelo would consider me among all his alternatives the easiest alternative. But it might be on paper, but not when we step in the ring. So we'll see. But I my focus right now is on Morrell, and he's more
Sure.
than, formidable. So I have my
Absolutely.
hands full with him, but I'll take care of business.
Absolutely. Well, good luck with good luck in the fight, Senna, and I wish you well. Thank you so much for your time. You've been generous with your time, and it's been really great talking to you. So,
Absolutely, but Ryan, you've been amazing too. You've been very nice and courteous, and I can tell that you're a great human being. So thank you for having me on your platform.
well, thank you for that. Enjoy the rest of your day, and have a good rest of your training camp, and we'll see you on the 16th.
Yes, sir. See you on the 16th. All right, have a good one.
Take care.
Yes,
You
sir.
too.
Take care. All right.